Hey guys, I want to welcome you today. I want to thank you for taking time to join me today for this next hour. I plan to just probably share with you a little bit on the front end of this first hour, and then after that, just hopefully answer any questions or work through some of the tensions that you guys are working through and wrestling with. So if you please will allow me, will you please bow your heads, and we're going to say a quick word of prayer, all right? Father in heaven, I want to thank you, dear God, for this awesome opportunity that you've given us together today. These men and these women who are here who serve in various contexts, Lord, and in different places throughout our cities. And so, Father, I just pray that that our time would be fruitful. Father, give us eyes to see your Son clearly. And, Father, also that our hearts would be open to the working of your Spirit. God, I thank you that for the great work you've called us to. Thank you for the many difficult places that you allow us to love people and serve you in. And so, Father, I pray that, God, that we would leave this place, not only this session, but this whole weekend, edified through your Spirit, encouraged by your word, Lord, and that we would be compelled by the gospel to continue to strive and to serve so that disciples would be made and cities would be reached. Father, we are just vessels in your hands, Lord. And may we be reminded, God, that it is not about our glory, neither our comfort, but it is about your glory, Father, and the fame of your great name. We thank you for this time. In the name of your Son, we pray, our Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen. All right, guys. Well, my name's Lorenzo Elizondo. I want to share just a brief few minutes about who I am, where we come from, and what the Lord is doing in us and through us, and then just kind of move on from there to share a little bit about our journey and hopefully some experiences where you are. Does anybody have their little black book with them? That can tell. Is it navigating through the challenges of inner city ministry? Is that what this is called, correct? I just want to make sure I put it out there correctly. And so, my name is Lorenzo. I come from a neighborhood here in this city of Dallas. It is south of here, about maybe 40 minutes, 45 minutes. It is just about 10 minutes, literally. Within 10 minutes south of downtown proper in an area known as Oak Cliff, if you're familiar. How many of you from DFW Metroplex? Cool. The rest of you not. Wonderful. Oak Cliff was actually the first suburb of Dallas, okay? It was one time where all the rich people played and all the wealthy people hung out. Actually, it's kind of funny. It's named after a guy named Sonny Cliff, who was a mobster in Dallas, and he developed Oak Cliff and said it would be one of the wealthiest places, and sure enough, it was. As a matter of fact, his mansion is now owned by Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship, and it's actually used as a crisis pregnancy center. Now it is being converted into a place where men and women will be trained for greater capacity in ministry. So that's a really cool story behind that of the gospel and redemption. Not only was that part of Oak Cliff, Oak Cliff then was annexed by the city. The city wanted to buy it. And so the city said, hey, there's so much happening over there. We want to make you part of Greater Dallas. And so they said, the Trinity River, literally the other side of the bridge, will no longer be our border. Oak Cliff will now be our southern border. And so the city annexed, and the only condition that the leaders of the Oak Cliff community put in place was that it would not have to change its name. It would still be called Oak Cliff. So to this day, people call Oak Cliff as a proper city, although it is part of the city of Dallas. However, if you still write Oak Cliff on your mail, it'll still get to your house because it's a recognized city through the city of Dallas. So that's kind of cool. When I moved into Oak Cliff, I always tell people we were the only thing brown on our block other than the trees. It was still very white. My family is from West Dallas, which is still just beginning the fruits of seeds that were planted there for business renewal and some, I don't call it full gentrification, but just changes of opportunity for commerce to come in, great tax benefits for business owners. And so it's just now seeing a full swing of retail, particularly through the business of restaurants. And so it's really cool, but my family's from West Dallas. And so early on growing up, I learned really quick that what it meant to be a man was you fight and you do whatever it takes to come out on top. And so I remember going to my little all-white school for the first time in Oak Cliff and wearing a lowrider t-shirt. Some of you people know what I'm talking about, right? Like you wear khakis and old pre-Vans black shoes called Winos. Y'all might not remember those, right? And a low-rider t-shirt. And so you show up to school with this. And the second day of school, I wore a t-shirt that said, "I'm the only hell my mother ever raised." And they said, "No, you can't wear that kind of shirt here. I don't know where you come from, but you can't wear those here." So right away, beginning to see white kids in school was like incredibly weird and different. But by the time I got out of elementary school, junior high, and high school, something significant had happened in my community. I went from a school that was predominantly white in elementary and graduating high school with a school that's about 90% Hispanic, and that number is still there. So I knew what white flight was before I knew it had a name, okay? Not only in our schools, but in our churches. And not only in our churches, but in our businesses. The hottest area in Oak Cliff right now is called Bishop Arts District. If you Google it, in Dallas, is one of the top places to go. But I remember Bishop Arts District literally living, my aunt owned a house right across the street where the fire station is, which is now this really nice restaurant called Gloria's Restaurant. And literally everything is boarded up. Like that's what I remember about Bishop Arts District. And there was one little restaurant that stayed there. I'm telling you this story to kind of give you a background about how our community has changed. And now seeing it as a lot of church planters that want to come to Dallas, they say, "Hey, we want to go to Bishop Arts District." And they know that we're there, so they call and they're like, "Hey, man, we want to plant a church in Oak Cliff." I'm like, "Great, let's do it, let's do it." And then I say, "Where are you planning on going?" And it never fails. "We want to go to Bishop Arts District." I was like, "Awesome, bro, awesome." But that's like 10% of all of Oak Cliff. It's the one little sexy hipster spot, and that's where people kind of like want to go, and that's cool. Praise God. All people need the gospel, right? And so, but I tell them, man, Oak Cliff is so much more diverse than that. So we've experienced everything from white flight to, and there's a reason why people were leaving. The honest truth is it wasn't a good place to live. I myself wanted to graduate high school. My prayer was to graduate high school, get out of the neighborhood. So I joined the Marines that summer. I left 7 days after graduating high school. Thank you. That summer, two of my friends were murdered who I was in high school with during those 3 months that I was gone. And so it was kind of, it was a place, high drugs. I remember when my wife and I first married, my wife is from a suburb of Grand Prairie, and then we moved to Oak Cliff. I remember the first time at night she woke me up. Lorenzo. I was like, what? I thought somebody was breaking into the house. She goes, "There's a helicopter shining lights in our house." I was like, "That's okay. Hopefully they catch the bad guy. Let's go to sleep," right? I mean, because that was kind of like what the environment, right? So you guys are kind of getting the picture, right? A lot of drugs, a lot of crime. So people had valid reasons to leave, right? It's just that the church should have never left. So when we were looking to fast forward, the Lord saves my wife and I. The Lord does a redeeming work in us. That's a whole different topic of what the Lord rescued us from. I'm talking about just a crazy, crazy life that the Lord rescued us from drug dealing, partying, that kind of lifestyle. And God just rescued us and began to redeem my family, began to redeem my marriage. We begin to get discipled by men in our church, women in our church, and we start growing. Fast forward from that, we feel that the Lord begins to open opportunities to disciple men, to preach the gospel. So we begin to preach. We begin to lead discipleship groups. We begin to lead community groups before they were called that. And so we're doing all these things that we just see it in Scripture. We start to try to do those. From that time, we feel that the Lord is calling us to possibly ministry. So we want to grow in the Word. We go to Bible college. We start being trained in that. And so lo and behold, fast forward some years after God grows us up and we have a family, we're sent out of Oak Cliff. Like that was the goal. You graduate, hopefully you graduate, and hopefully you get to move out. So we're gone. So we begin to pray, "Lord, where do you want us to go? Where do you want us to go?" So we're thinking about all these wonderful communities around Dallas that are great and growing. Anybody ever heard that? Man, if you could just put a church right there, it would be awesome because it's booming, right? Nothing wrong with that if that's what the Lord calls you to do. I think there's something totally wrong with it if you're going just for safety reasons, right? Like you're banking people buying houses means people are going to buy into your church. Doesn't always work that way. And so anyhow, we began to pray and we felt like the Lord was making it evident for us to go to Oak Cliff. And we began to say, "Lord, is this really what you want?" So I said, "Okay, Lord, if this is what you want, you'll put it in my wife's heart." Like I knew that was my ace of spades. Like that's not going to happen, you know? And I remember my wife and I went to a season of fasting and praying. And during that time of fasting and praying, we both got together again after we both prayed. And we sat in our living room. And my wife was emotional and tears coming out of her eyes. And I'm sitting there. I was like, what did the Lord tell you? She's like, no, what did the Lord tell you? And I was like, no, what did the Lord tell you first? You know, playing that game. And so she starts crying. And she says, I feel like the Lord has told me that he's showed you what we need to do. And my job is to come alongside you and believe him for that. And I was like, wow, well, I think this is what the Lord's telling us to do. So she's like, okay, let's do it, you know. And so, man, we didn't know what to do. I hadn't heard of Acts 29. We had gone through our own renewal, if you will, in our doctrine, our theology, about a five-year journey that I don't have time to tell you in that right now. And the Lord just shaping us. All of a sudden, I hear about a guy named Mark Driscoll. And then he's speaking somewhere that I got invited to go to the event. At the end of his sermon, which I thought was a powerful sermon on the essence of the gospel, he says, hey, if you're thinking about starting a church, look us up. We'll assess you. We'll help you to see if you're ready. We'll tell you if you're not, da-da-da-da-da. And I wrote Acts29Network.org. I was like, man, I'll check those guys out. About 3 months after that, I had filled it out. I finished the application process. I'm sitting down in an assessment, and they tell us, yes, you guys are good to go. Where are you going? Tell them our story. Tell them what we're doing. And we jump into starting a church in probably, at the time, one of the roughest environments in our city to go start a church. Right now, 7 years later, looking back, there's a lot of beautiful things happening in our city that are positive. At the same time, sometimes they have adverse effects on the poor people who are there. But at the same time, we're grateful that God has called us there for this time. So right now, we're having to ask ourselves, what does it mean to lead a church, a ministry, a disciple, a movement of disciples who are engaging the city in a context that's extremely changing, literally by the day, due to money. And so we're navigating through that. But some of the challenges that we went through, which is why you're here to hear about, the places that God has called us to is the first thing I want to begin today, is God has called you to a place because that place has people. And I know a lot of guys, when they're coming up in ministry, a lot of people, when they're deciding, men and women, what's God's going to do with me? How's God going to use me? It seems kind of fuzzy, right? And a lot of people say, it really doesn't matter where you go, just go. And that might be true. But listen, if the Holy Spirit doesn't ever give you clear direction on where you're going, you should really pause and pray and not just chase the wind. And maybe it's not time. Maybe you have a calling. It's just not the right time. Because when God calls you, he's going to call you to a particular place and a particular people to minister to them and to be the representative and an ambassador, as Paul says, of the gospel, to bring the good news and the manifestation and demonstration of the kingdom of God present among them and what that looks like. And so we felt like the place that God was calling us to, your cities and my cities, and I want to focus because of where we are on inner city context and what that means. When I first joined Acts 29, everybody said urban. I thought urban meant inner city. One time that was the same thing. Now kind of urban could mean downtown. It could mean, you know, all these different meanings. So now we're going back to really old school language, inner city, like this is what it is, which means the poor and kind of wild out, right, context of where people are still carry guns and crazy things still happen, right? There's crack pipes and needles and all these things that we're familiar with. Now, the place where God will call you to, the places that God has called us to, which is why I'm assuming why you're here, is so that because the gospel needs to be there. I mean, God wants to reach the people who are there. When Jesus died on the cross, he didn't just die for the up and coming and not just for the down and out. He did it so that the gospel could be spread throughout all people and there could be the worship of his name among, even in the places that seem the most broken. And so the Oak Cliff, you could say, is a representation of this, of the diversity. Some of the challenges that you face in your place, number one is you have to know that God has called you there, that you have a calling from God to be there. And the reason I want to tell you that is because I believe, right? And I'm not trying to compare. We're like the Green Berets and the other guys are not. We're like the Force Recon Marines. And that's silly, right? There's degrees of difficulty in any level of ministry that God will put you, call us to do. But I believe that in inner city ministry, man, there are some challenges that are unique to that context. And there's just no denying that. Some of the big ones that we're going to address today is not just because of the place that God called you to, but the culture that exists there. There's a degree of difficulty. I like to call it a starting point. That's the language that we can all relate to. Like most people's starting point is in life is somewhere right here if they live an average life. But I believe that people who are in inner city context, their starting point is further back. Just to get them to run the race, there's like a lot of catching up and makeup that you have to do with people. I like to say people because a lot of times when we go to inner city context, we like to think in terms of projects. Like if we can just do this and if we can just do that. By the way, all good things that must be done. All good things that must be done. But God has not called us to projects. He's called us to people. He's called us to people. And so the ministry that we do should always have names and faces and people that we reach. Because God wants to do something among the people who are there. But it doesn't change the fact that there's a culture in place there. There's a culture in place that says, what is someone going to do for me, right? This is one of the most difficult things that there is to change in the place that God calls to have interstate ministry is because there's a mindset that's used to that when the church shows up, it's Christmas time. Right? They're bringing teddy bears, they're bringing iPods, and they're bringing turkeys, and they want all that stuff. But sometimes when you bring Jesus and discipleship, they're like, man, we're not used to this kind of church, right? We're used to people showing up on Christmas and Thanksgiving and doing cool things and paying my bill and helping me provide for my children so I can keep smoking crack or keep doing whatever I want to do, living my life doing this way. But I don't want a church that's going to call me to any type of degree of holiness and walking Christ, following Christ as his disciple. So those are some of the challenges that are there. So I want to encourage you that if you're not distinct and clear on your calling, man, wait and serve faithfully where you are until God directs you to where you're at. And once you get there, the reason I want to say this is because there are some times where that's all you have left to hold on to, is God called me here. Because there will be days when you show up at your church, and by the way, unless you have a lot of money in inner city ministry, chances are your building's going to be kind of jacked. I mean, that's just, it is what it is, right? So we inherited a building from 1946. It was the second theater in the state of Texas. At one time, it was called the Beverly Hills Theater. Imagine that, right? Because it was like bougie, right? Now it's like jacked. Like I've got some folks from my church in here today, and they would tell you when it was raining outside, guess what? It was raining inside, right? Our first anniversary, man, we're just excited. We're giving God glory and praise. And then next thing you know, a ceiling tile, boom, falls, right, because of the rain. And you know what my people did? They just picked it up and just kept on going, right? I mean, because it's nothing new. Like, they understand that because that's our environment, right? Now, am I saying that just because you're in a city means you have to be poor? No, but chances are you will be. Chances are you will be. And if you're looking for safety and security, man, the inner city might not be the place for you. And I'm not trying to scare you, and I'm not trying to brag. I just don't want to see you get hurt. I just don't want to see you hurt your wife. I don't want to see you hurt your children. Because if God has not called you to that, you're doing out of some other motive, some other reason, you're in for a long road of hurting for no reason. But when God calls you to that, no degree of suffering, no degree of discomfort will compare to the obedience and joy that you get from following Jesus and his mission to reach these people. I mean, it's priceless. It's incomparable. I could tell you the stories over and over again of the people that God has saved at our church. Totally crazy. One of the stories Acts 29 likes to tell about our church is on our very first service, we had had a couple of preview services, meeting with people, gathering people, getting to know people. This was our first public launch service or whatever. So we show up, we open the doors. There's some guys, they show up to church. Long story short, I'm at the door shaking hands, meeting people, telling them thank you for coming. And all of a sudden, as I'm walking away, somebody comes out here. They're fighting, right? And so there goes the pastor and all that. I didn't have leaders yet. Like, we're just running, and there's, like, chaos all across the front of our church and the parking lot and the driveway because some dudes that had beef from back in the day saw each other at church, and guess what they decided to do at church? They were going to take care of it, right? I mean, this is what happens, like, on the first day. I remember one day I'm sitting there. I'm leading a small discipleship study, talking to some guys, and then all of a sudden our doors fly open, boom, and there's some dude beating up some dude and right in our lobby, and we're just standing there like, somebody going to do something about this, right? And so we finally get up. We go and we talk to the guys. One guy said the other dude tried to steal his phone, and you never know what's going to happen. So I said, wait right here. Let's call the police. Next thing you know, nobody wants to tell the truth. Nobody says nothing. They run out. A month ago now, our building got broken into for like the third or fourth time. This time they hit us pretty good. Before that, there was still like a laptop, or there was still this, there was still that. And then the guys and the people in the street, like, they know us already. And so a couple of the people that I was talking to that are on the street all the time, and they're like, man, I can't believe somebody did this to your church, bro. You guys take care of everybody, all this and that and the other. And I'm like, it's frustrating is what I'm trying to say. That as a leader, you sometimes ask yourself, man, when is this going to stop? Like, when am I going to get something easy? Like, when is it going to finally go my way? When is that big $30,000 check going to show up in my offering? Like I hear some of my friends talk about. You know what I'm talking about? Like, when is that going to happen? So in those middle of those discouraging moments and frustrating moments, like, one of the things we have to guard against, and this is on the back end, but I'm going to say this right now. One of the things that we have to guard against is when we are bothered by the people that God has called us to serve. Like when they ring that doorbell, when they knock on that door, and the first thing you say is like, ugh, I got to serve this person. Like there's something wrong there. There's something not right there. And usually for me, when that happens is when I've made ministry about something else other than Jesus. When it's interrupting my flow, when it's interrupting my meeting, when it's interrupting my schedule. Because you know what all those things in reality mean to me? Success. And when I feel like my context is interrupting my success, that's when I have to go back to and remember what the Lord has called me to, what the Lord has called us to. And I love the passage that Scott shared this morning because that's actually what I was going to read to us today, is that, man, God has called us to labor among people where it's going to require laying down of our lives before them. And not just giving them tokens, not just giving them projects, but actually giving them the gospel in a way, watch this, that is very evident because they see it in our lives. They see it in how we live. The men that you reach and the women that we reach, that we disciple with the gospel, the families, like for some of them, mark my words, when they come to your house, if they come to your house, or when they eat with you at church or at the restaurant, when you invite them to go eat, it's going to be the first time they see a husband and wife and children pray together. And they're going to say, man, does this really happen? Like, do you guys really live this way? Yes, we do, right? And it's not foreign to us, but it's foreign to people who we're reaching. So not only about the place that God has called us to, that's one of the challenges. The other one is poverty. Poverty is a huge one in the inner city. And right away, we think dollar signs, and we should because it matters. And if you're the lead pastor, the lead planter, listen to what I'm going to tell you. It's part of your job. It's part of your calling. Part of your calling to work just as hard as you do on your sermon to provide resources for your church. And I'm going to be honest, why am I telling you that? Because I was horrible at that when we started. Part of it was my pride. Part of it was my background. I was always taught that if you want something, you work hard and you get it. Don't go begging people to give you anything. You do whatever you got to do to make it happen. So part of that old nature was still in me, still working in me, operating in my mindset. Man, I'm not going to go ask no white church to give us money, right? Like if they want to give us money, they better show up at my door. Silly pride, sin, okay? So it's not just financial poverty that is there because it exists. There's a greater level of poverty, which is spiritual poverty, just brokenness. If you minister in a Mexican culture, a Hispanic, Latino culture, you're going to find that they have a hodgepodge of all types of religions sort of thrown together like in a big old bowl of gumbo. They don't know what they believe. Even the ones who say they're Catholic, when you ask them, when's the last time you went to Mass? I think when I did my first communion, and then when I got baptized, right? And they don't know what that means. You say, hey, what about the Eucharist? What is that, right? Well, you know, when you take communion, they're like, oh, what does that mean? I don't know, right? And so there's these cultural things. But there is poverty, watch this, that affects everything that you do. Children who want to have what somebody else has and are willing to do whatever it takes to get it, including selling drugs, including selling their body, including robbing, including stealing, including murdering. There's a restaurant owner down the street from us who his son was, I don't know, involved, whether he was involved in drugs or not is not known, but he decides one day after high school to go see his dad at his restaurant, and he pulls up to the restaurant. Two kids come around that side of another car, and they murder him right there in the street. Right, we've driven up on a Sunday morning where two guys were murdered. There's literally caution tape all around our church. I walk up to the investigator. I say, hey, we're planning on having church today. What do we do? Like, we don't want to interrupt your work, but what do we do? He's like, well, you see that right over there? There's a body with a covered up, and then there's another body over there. And he goes, man, he said, we found casings all around your building, in your parking lot, in the back, and we're going to be here for a while. He said, but we'll move half of the caution tape so people can at least get into church. Right, there was a young guy who grew up in our church, in our neighborhood, and he would always walk by, and I would shake his hand. He's like, what's up, Pastor? I was like, what's up, man? And I said, when are you going to come to church, man? I'm going to be here next week. I said, man, whenever you can, come. I said, you know what? You don't even got to come to church. I'm always here. You see me knock on the door, we'll go hang out. He's like, all right. He came one Sunday. And then about 2 weeks later, he was murdered at his house, a block away from our church, over a flat screen TV, shot in the head, right? Why? Because there's an idol that says, man, if I can just have things, that's what's going to save me. And so we're always dealing, not just, I want to get to the underpinnings of poverty, because it's not just you're poor, you don't have bread, you don't have milk, and that's extremely important. We run a food pantry out of our church, self-sustained by the members of our church, and it's extremely important to care for those type of needs. But what I'm trying to tell you is, as leaders, as disciple makers, as preachers of the gospel, that there's something deeper underneath that poverty that goes beyond just food and cash and money. It's the desire that they feel having stuff is what's going to save them and make them better. Not only the place, not only the poverty, but the people who are there. And I said this in the beginning, we're to reach people and not just do projects. We're to reach people and not just run programs. And I know you know that. So why am I saying that? The reason I'm saying that is because that becomes our default mode in that type of context. And you know why? Because we feel overwhelmed. We feel overwhelmed. We don't know what to do. So we're like, man, I got to do something. Let me come up with this idea. Let me come up with this plan. Let me come up with this project. And we whiteboard things. And listen, I'm not saying don't do those things. Those things are needed. But never at the expense of you keeping your eye on people, keeping your hands and your pulse and the pulse of your church on people. And you know what else this is going to produce? Listen, slow growth. Slow growth. We know how to get a large number of people to gather in Oak Cliff. It's not hard. We give stuff away, and boom! I mean, people show up. We had an event at the park, our first Easter event. I'm not exaggerating. On a low hand, 3,500 people, upwards to around over 5,000 people. We're a small church, a poor church, and this many people showed up. Right? Not once, but several years in a row. So we know how to get people to come out. We know how people to do this. And you know what happens to us? When our ego's leading us and not the gospel, we celebrate that. But what we should be celebrating is the transformation of people. And so that's going to cause you to grow slower than some of your brothers and your sisters who are leading ministries elsewhere. And I'm not saying all suburban churches grow fast. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying you have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with that you're going to pour out your life, you're going to pour out your time in leading people. And the guys, quick story. So in our church, the guys that I thought were going to come in and knock it out of the park and lead in high capacity levels for us, it just didn't happen. A nice way to say it is the context was too complicated for them. And so they left. And you know who's leading for us? It's taken a while, but you know who's leading for us? The guys that were saved there. The women who came to know Jesus there. Who have we discipled, who have we poured into, who we've led. And you know what? It takes time. It takes time. And if you're in an inner city context, it's going to take that much longer, all right? So, and then one more thing is the process. I'm sorry, the prophets, the voices that they hear. This goes back to this issue of poverty that tells them what is cool, what do we do, what do we not do, what values do we hold to. There's voices all over the inner city context that tells them this is what it means to be a man, this is what it means to be a woman, this is what it means to be a baller, this is what it means to be large and in charge, this is what we value, this is what we don't value. It's okay to steal, it's okay to lie, it's okay to be the victim, it's okay to do this. I tell all my guys, I say, man, you're still trying to be a hustler, you're still trying to run game, right? There's a difference in the gospel that changes us. So the only thing that changes that narrative of false idol worship is the gospel. So the essence of our preaching, listen to me, is it. That's it. And not just preaching on Sunday. I'm talking about fathers preaching to their families, mothers preaching to their sons, dads preaching to their daughters together, preaching to their neighbors, not just on the pulpit, but they learn it because you are faithful to the scriptures as you preach the gospels. You're not just attacking what's bad. You're actually representing the only thing that sets them free, with is Jesus Christ. Lastly, so what are we doing? What do we do there? What are some of the processes that we do there? What we're trying to do there, the bottom line is discipleship. That's the only thing that works. That's the only thing that sets people free. It's teaching them how to follow Jesus. Because when you get guys that used to hustle and bustle, and now they need to earn money, and they can't afford that car no more, right? they can't afford to do these things anymore. And now he's got to go punch a clock and work hard like an ordinary Joe. And he says, man, this is for punks, right? He says, man, this is for weak punks. I'm not going to be doing this. And they, why? Because their identity is not coming from the gospel. And you know what you do? You pull them to the side. You say, man, our identity is not in possessions. Our identity is not in what people think about us. Our identity is not how many people we are afraid of us in the streets. Our identity is in Jesus. And he was a servant of all. And the reason we do this is because we want to demonstrate to the world around us how awesome God is, that he's more beautiful, more important than the rest of the stuff that we hold on to so tightly sometimes, right? And when people begin to experience that depth, that level of transformation, that not only changes their habits, but it changes their home, their heart, their families, you know what happens? Then they start to come to church and they want to know what's going on. They want to know what's happening. They want to know how did he change? How did she change? How did she change? What are all these things that are happening? So discipleship, which leads to leaders being raised up as their gifts begin to rise, as their talents become more evident, as their skill becomes more precise, as you begin to entrust them. And it's going to be messy, right? I mean, don't try to be like some other church who don't have your problems. All right. Don't try to be what you're not. If you're a plant, man, enjoy that season. Like, it's okay to be messy, and it's okay not to be perfect. Now, don't be sloppy and careless. Don't hear that, right? Well, they said I could do whatever I want. No, that's not what I'm saying, okay? But what I am saying is the people you disciple, their leadership gifts begin to manifest, and then at the end, there's a multiplication. By God's grace, even though we are a small church, I say small because we're still around the 150 range, not only are we a smaller church, but we're also, our financial budget is very limited. We build the bridge as we go. Anybody ever heard that term? Like, people say, hey, what's your budget? And I'm like, man, we're working on it, right? Like, that's what we say all the time, right? My budget is, we're going to get to Sunday and next month, and here's where we want to be, and this is what we're praying for, right? It's not careless. It's a reality. It's where we are. It's the things that we happen there. So what do we should do? But even though those things have been true, we can, by God's grace, by his grace, not because of us, but by his grace, we can tell the stories of people who we've sent out, other leaders who've planted churches, teams who've gone out to be a part of other churches. And even though our budget is stretched and tight, by the grace of God, man, we faithfully give to church planting. Why? Because we believe in it. We believe in it, and we want to be a part of that. So those are some of the challenges or some of the things that we see. I'm going to throw out a few more, just sort of like bullet points for you, and then we'll ask some questions as we go along, because I don't want to ramble on and on and on for you. Some of the other challenges that we face is you're going to have a hard time drawing some top caliber people to come join your team in the early stages. Because it's hard, man. It's really, really hard. It's really hard. So you're going to have some challenges there. Another challenge you're going to have is if you're not used to the disagree and dysfunction of your culture, man, you're in for a rude awakening, right? I'm talking about to the depths of dysfunction that you find in families, that you find. You're going to be like, how is this normal for them? But it is. It is. Man, you drive up to our church at 2 in the morning, you think it's 2 in the afternoon. I mean, there's people, there's a whole different culture that comes out at night. Y'all remember that old Houdini song, right? Freaks come out at night. Y'all may be too young for that, right? But, man, it's like that. I mean, there's 7-Eleven right across the street. There's a cash checking place. There's a chicken place. Typical, you know, inner city neighborhood, and there's people all out. But the challenge is a degree of dysfunction that exists in families. We kind of talked about that. One of the other challenges you might face is some of the expectations that people are going to place on you as a pastor and on your wife and on your children and on your family. They're going to think you're Jesus sometimes. Sometimes they're going to think that you're perfect. And man, listen, check that at the door. Don't let it blow you up, right? Just constantly remind people that you're not Jesus. There's only one Savior and you're not him. And also guard your family, guard your wife. It depends on what season you're in. When we first started the church, our kids were still younger and smaller. Since then, our kids have grown. Our youngest is 13. We have 2 kids in college, one in high school. And so with that, my wife now has more freedom, more time to serve, to minister. But guard your family, because the expectations of other people put on your families. The other challenge is just money, finances. I suggest that if you're going to an inner city environment, partner with somebody who believes in you on the front end. But listen to me, but don't let it stop you if it doesn't happen. Because if money stops you now, it will always stop you. It will always stop you. There's some things that are more important than money, right? I mean, it's just the truth. And sometimes, listen, sometimes you as the lead pastor and your family, you're going to have to set that example for your church. You're just going to have to live through it sometimes, right? So if you're looking for an upward mobile, like you, I want a raise in 5 years, and then I want another raise in 10 years, then I want a review at the third year, and I want this bonus, and I want that bonus, you probably need to go somewhere else. Like, I'm just saying that because I love you, right? Because I care for you. Another challenge that you're going to face is getting people to live on mission for Jesus and not to feel like, okay, the gospel's rescued me. What else comes with this Jesus Santa Claus, right? It's again, discipleship. Another one is racial and cultural barriers. So if you're white in a predominantly Hispanic or African-American community, man, be prepared. This is probably going to take you a little longer. You just don't have the cultural capital yet with the people until you get to build that up, until they know your name. By the way, just because you're the same skin color doesn't mean you get a free pass and the door's wide open. If there's one thing that's for sure about the inner cities, they're gonna doubt you. Because all they see in their life is people running game and lying and trying to get an edge up on the next person just like they are, right? Another one of your challenges is, and I'll stop here, is just the cultural tensions that you're going to face when you bring the gospel to an environment like this. It's not always black and white, cut and dry on what you're supposed to do. It's just not. I mean, there's some circumstances that are really, really hard, particularly when it comes to families living together with children and blended families and all these other issues. There's people that will tell you, hey, pastor, I can't take that job because then it means I don't get my Section 8. There's people that will tell you, hey, I can't do that because then it means that I'm not going to get as much money on food stamps or whatever, Lone Star Card, whatever they get, right? And so you got to navigate them through this. There was literally a woman in our church, an older woman in our church. She came to my wife and I, and she said, hey, pastor, I want to get married, but I can't get married legally. I was like, so you're not married? She's like, well, we are, because we snuck into a church and we said our vows to each other, so we're married. I'm like, oh, wow. It's honest to God truth. And then she says this, she goes, and the reason we can't get married because then my husband won't get his check. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So what do you, I mean, I know what the answer is. You know what the answer is. But what I'm saying is sometimes it's not that easy, right, because you're dealing with people. All right, that's enough talking. I just kind of gave an introduction on some things. Is there any questions or comments that you guys have about anything, anything, any way I can help you? Yes, sir. Yeah.
But how do you kind of like approach them too, like safely?
Yeah. I think you got to show them. I think one of the most important pieces of cultural equity that you have is consistency. They need to see that you're there. And you should care about things that they care about. There's plenty of things you care about that they care about. That doesn't mean you promote what they promote. And they know that, dude. They know what you're about. But they're going to see if you're real. They're going to see if you're real. They want to know. So they're not expecting you to be. There's some people that they think, that's another thing. I'm in my 40s. I don't dress like I'm 20. I don't talk like I'm 20. You know, I don't throw out all the slang, and I've showed up to church in my cowboy jersey once or twice. Because my whole church on cowboy, you think the Cowboys are playing at my church on Sundays, right? I mean, it's crazy. Like, they all show up. I'm not lying. Like, I stood in the back one time. I was like, wow. This is, we ain't got money, but we sure got jerseys. You know what I mean? Like, you know? So to answer your question, bro, I think a consistency, finding common ground, and you got to understand, and I'm not saying all the time because we're not, I'm glad you brought this up because we don't know. We don't know. We can't assume that we know what they need. We can't assume that we know why they're in a gang. I mean, it could be something as simple as, dude, this is the only way I can get money from my mom. Or in my case, uncles, cousins, everybody. Like, if you don't do this, you're a punk, period. You may not even like it, but that's who we are and that's what we do. And so you got to be that person, that voice that's always accessible. You know, God is sovereign. God is saving people all the time. And he's calling you to be there so that when he calls him to himself by his grace, somehow through the work that you're doing, he can use that work to draw them to him. So practically, become friends, be open, talk to them. If I would say if they're real gang members, not just little wannabe thugs, be respectful.
walk across the street and talk to them.
Ask. Say, hey, man, I'm a pastor at this church. I care about this community like you do. Yeah. I know that you're here because you're looking out for your friends and your family. I'm about that also. Yeah. And I just want to talk to you. Yeah. I'm not going to preach to you. I just want to get to know you. Mm-hmm. This is who I am. I have a wife and I have a daughter. And I was born here. I went to school. This is what I did. You know, how long have you lived here? How long has your family been here? And they'll just talk to you. And you know what? No one talks to them that way. This is my boy, Billy. Billy's in Houston, Pasadena. He's a cutthroat church like ours. I love this guy. We talk all the time. He's a good friend of mine. I asked him to be here. So anytime you want to jump in, bro, yeah, to answer something with me. I love Billy Bernard's white brother, but is more brown than me sometimes. Nah, he's cool. He's my boy. Good question. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
I just want to say, yeah, I think the language, especially of men.
Yes.
Is affirmation.
Thank you.
Where
you invite me. I'll go with you.
So I'm really shocked at just how starved for affirmation that they are. I mean, there's the relational capital builds really, really good and finding those places. But the question I have for you is like, at what point do you, because we're the struggle we're dealing with right now, is at what point do you dust off your feet and go to the next?
At what point do you dust off your feet and go to the next? Why would, so this is not a pushback, because there is a time for that.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, what's causing us to say, hey, maybe we should move?
I would drive by this housing project every day in my office. I was like, man, we've got our mission statement says that we're here to take responsibility for the spread of the gospel and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Right.
And so the question is, I have a lot. I've got two other significant houses that we're just not in, but with limited people. And so at what point do you go, man, is this the Lord just saying, man, like, they're not necessarily loving you.
Right.
We're not seeing.
I get you. Yeah, that's cool. So two things. I would say, number one, Billy, you can help me with this. I would say number one is, does the Lord still want me there?
Yeah.
Right? Has God called me to here? I think 2 years is not that long.
Yeah.
I know sometimes we're not getting the results that we want to see. And I'm not saying you are. I'm just in general. If I would say it's time to go, if my family's in danger, right, in danger that I can avoid, I want to care and protect my wife and family. Right, I'm not going to put them in harm's way needlessly for the sake of the gospel. If we have to do that, yes. Needlessly, no, I won't do that. So that's absolute yes.
What's that look like? Can you give us an example of that?
If I know that that my wife and children are in serious threat, I'm going to protect them to a full capacity. And I'm not going to be foolish and needlessly put them in harm's way. Now, if they just say leave or we're going to kill you, something crazy like that, which hasn't happened. But if that happened, I would tell my wife and my children, I don't expect you to go. I'm going to go, but I don't expect you to go. I pray that you don't go. But if the Lord tells you to go with me, let's go together. You know, that's kind of what we would do, I hope, in that situation. I haven't been there, but that's what I would hope that we would do. I would not tell my wife if my wife is scared, you're going to go. What's wrong with you? You know, that's what I mean. Or my children, I wouldn't just say, no, you're going to do this. This is daddy's job, blah, blah, blah. That's the opposite of what I would hope to do.
I just want to make clear that I'm not talking about that my church doesn't believe. Yeah.
No, no, no. I hear you.
It's just kind of our just consistent presence multiple days a week being there.
I would say, man, if the Lord gives you the peace and the clear direction to move on, you can move on. There's some things that just don't work. We've had to do that too. Ministry, outreaches, things. Man, the event I told you where 5,000 people were coming, we don't do it anymore. It wasn't producing fruit that we were praying to see. It just wasn't working for us, so we did something else. I would say, man, look at other people who might be having success in an environment similar to that. Yeah. Yeah, and that's tough, man. You know, that might give you even greater reason to stay and work. Maybe you have to scale down what you're trying to do. And rethink, maybe our approach was wrong from the jump, you know. That's a big question, man. I really can't tell you the exact answer to that. Yeah, Billy?
One thing, I'll jump in on that, and what you got to understand, because I don't know if your whole crew is one, you're coming in, you're going to have to be in an inner city context, and you're coming into whether it's projects, whether it's just, you know, everyone there is just poor, they're all black, Hispanic. When I see a crew come rolling up, and what Lorenzo hit on earlier is. Here's what the inner city knows, the church is left. The church isn't left.
Yep.
Gangs didn't leave.
Right.
Islam didn't leave. Churches did. And so one thing we gotta understand when we go in there, man, we gotta be prepared to love the mess out of these people. And sometimes we're gonna see quick, and I think it's one thing wrong with the American culture, doing everything quick and instant. And it just doesn't happen. Like, we've seen great success in staying in areas for a long time.
Yeah.
We had one area, it took forever. It took 3 years to finally start seeing some people want to come into the church. You know, but I told our people, look, whether they ever come to church or not, we got to hang out with them. And you got to find what works. Like, hey, this isn't working. Well, let's tweak and let's change and do this. And ask the people, too, like, hey, man, what are things that we can do to serve y'all? Because we ain't going to work. If you don't like black people, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Everybody in the hood will tell you, and there's a crazy white pastor, because that's what they know me as. And I have no problem ever telling myself.
Sure.
And it breaks the ice, but we've seen great success by staying let them know, man, we ain't going to work.
I'm going to share one of Billy's stories really quick. When they first started, we talked at a boot camp, and then some of his guys were like, man, we're frustrated. They didn't say these words. I'm Cliff Notes. We're frustrated. We're this, we're that. And they're like, I said, well, what are you doing? They're like, man, there's just this park. Like, we want to own that park for Jesus, man. It's right by where we meet. Da, 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 da. And I told one of the guys, I said, well, what are you doing? He's like, man, I play soccer with the guys. Like, there you go. There you go. Just, it may not be exactly what, and guess what? Now they've had, like, service there, baptisms there. But it's how many years?
It took 3 years.
So, you know, I mean, I don't know if that helps.
Tweaking, and we're not giving up. And the reason I say that, man, I've had some hardcore dudes around my church that nobody ever knew that was hardcore. And when I first met them, their first question is, like, I had one dude who showed up in my house with a girl, and he'd been taught all his life by people this and this and that. First question is, man, what you got me up in this mug for? And I was like, that's a good question. My wife's like, ooh, I'm out of here. You know, and she here. I just put my arms around him. He's like, you're hugging me. I was like, man.
Anybody else? Another question? Yes, sir. Yes. Yeah. I serve them. I give them whatever I can. I believe in gift giving. I don't know, it's like an old tribal thing, right? I come in peace. So I literally give them books. I give them CDs. If we can, we write them a check, whatever it takes. I want to let them know that I'm for them, not against them. There are not very many reformed guys leading churches in inner city ministries. And if that's going to be your one flag that you got to have, good luck, you know. I mean, so we work with as many brothers as possible. And I tell them, hey, you know we don't agree on everything, right? They're like, yeah, I know that. And so I find common ground where we agree, make peace, and work with them. So, like, next year, we have 6 meetings every other month on the even months. I've invited 10 pastors, and we get together, and I'm bringing in the best guys I know to just love on them and shepherd them. And every other month, I'm going to get somebody to help me bless these guys. I can't foot that bill forever, but I'm sure going to get it started. So I'm hoping that the men that I bring in to speak to these men will want to invest in those men and in their churches. So I don't get into how they do church, because I'm going to be real honest with you, there's a lot of things I don't agree with, but I am happy that they're there, and I do want them to know that I care about them, and I do want them to know, I want them to see me as a friend. And there's a lot of people who have a problem with our church in our neighborhood, because the churches that have been there for a long time, they sort of get this bunker mentality. You know, their favorite verse is, we're in the world, not of the world, you know, and so we've gone through the whole process of being criticized, being the sellouts, being the wannabe cool church, all these things, until you get to know the pastors and you pray for them and you hang out with them, and then they begin to see, like, man, this guy, he has the same problems I do, you know. So I don't know if that helps, but it's relational more than anything among the lead pastors right now. And we have done things with 2 or 3 churches in the area to partner together, whether that's a marriage seminar together, outreach together, just things like that. So yeah, that takes time, though. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. But I live in a neighborhood that there's a lot of Latinos in. Our neighbors are a Mexican family, and my wife recently led their son to drag season to make to our house ever since we moved there.
Awesome.
And yeah, it was awesome. And then he went home and told his older sister, and she was like, I don't know, you're Catholic.
Yes.
So I guess, and a lot of his relatives don't even speak English.
Right. Let them be.
Yeah. Right.
Let them wear let them wear it. We don't care.
Yeah.
We want them to embrace the gospel. The gospel will work. The gospel will set them free. The gospel will expose them to error. The gospel will expose them to truth. We're not trying to divide Catholic and Protestant. That's somebody else's job. Let them be the dividers. We need to get past that. We had people, it wasn't until they were going to become covenant members of our church that they come full on faced with this dilemma. But before that, man, it's not a problem to us. We're like, I have guys in Spanish, they call me padre, like, because they think I'm a priest, you know? And you know what, dude, I'm cool with that. I have people tell me, what time does Misa start, you know, service? And I'm like, man, it starts at this time, you know? So I'm just saying, I know it's more difficult than that sometimes. But I'm just saying, let that not be an issue for us. Let that be an issue for them. And I would say, hey, man, if your family has raised you Catholic, our thing is not, are you Catholic? Our thing is, do you know Christ? Are you saved by grace through Jesus Christ? You know? And we begin to explain what that means. You know, and tell them, hey, man, you have to honor your family, especially if he's a kid. Honor your family, you know. So anyway, navigate through that, but don't let it divide you. Let them have that problem. Just continue to show them grace, teach them the truth, the doctrines of grace, you know. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
You had mentioned earlier how there's deep dysfunctionality, and it kind of stems from the family, and then mm-hmm. it flows into drugs and gangs and mm-hmm. prostitution. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. The answer is yes. So sometimes the greatest thing is like one-on-one discipleship with other healthy believers. But some people need counseling. So you got to be prepared that if you're not going to counsel them, you find them somebody who will, or make sure that they're getting counseling somewhere. By God's grace, we have a good relationship with the Village Church. And so I call their elders. And I say, hey, man, we need some help with this. You know, where do we send them? What do we do? So that's another thing. ministry-wise, okay, ministry-wise, we preach, and what is the other one you said, besides preach and disciple them? So we do that in a variety of ways. Getting back to what you said, what is the way we show respect? What is some common ground? I think this will help answer your question. Like, we're very, like, gangbangers and stuff like that. One of the ideologies is manhood, right? And so we say, okay, this is what it truly means to be a man. This is what it truly means to be a woman. This is how you do that. This is what that looks like. This is how you live for Jesus. So, man, we are, like, full front on all the time. That's a natural rhythm of our DNA. So we have from June to November, every week, it's kind of a corny name, but our guys like it. It's MMA, Monthly Manhood Academy. And they come once a month, and dudes invite their friends, and we don't do, I know some people would disagree with it, and that, okay, it's not worship time. It's not let's sing and let's preach. This is dudes' time. And so we welcome them, we feed them, we sit down, and we start talking about, man, when God designed men, this is what he had in mind. And so we talk about that, and that builds friendships, relationships. We have this thing called Fight Club for our dudes. Again, this is not for everybody. This is my context, right? It's a focused 12-week period of hardcore just pushing these dudes to the limit, and they love it. They love it because they want to be pressed as men. They're being pressed in the streets. They're being pressed everywhere they go, but the church is like, dude, just bring your Bible on Sunday and sing with us. You know what I mean? So we press them, and we help shape them over and over again. This is what's expected of you, and not all make it. It's not like 12 weeks, and you like it's not like soccer leagues where everybody gets a ribbon. This is like, man, you do all these things, you're in. If not, you're not part of this fraternity yet. We still love you. You're still saved by grace. I know there's a lot of problems with this thing if we're not careful. I see that, right? But I'm just giving you ideas of what else we do for them. So we're constantly, constantly addressing identity in the gospel, identity in the gospel, identity in the gospel. Our women do that too. We're trying to do it with our students, our children, same thing. We're careful about what we teach them on Sunday. We're careful about if they're with their family or away with their family. You know, so we don't do too much. Those are our big ones, man, right there. We have a focus time for men, a focus time for women, students. And it's not just because we're trying to keep them busy on Sunday. There's a lot of intentionality behind that. And then we provide opportunities where we can bump up against each other, you know. So, yes, ma'am. So they're going to experience that without your church already. So what you need to do is not compound that problem. Okay? So this is still theoretic for us, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you, and I'm going to try to give it to you in 30 seconds. All right? Here's the deal. That's already happening to families, so don't add to that. Don't become another brick on that load. All right? That's already going to happen because of culture. So we should help the family be together following Jesus, right? So we don't want to add to that. So what do you do then? I think you should do, we're an all English service. We're not Spanish. We don't think that's better. That's just who we decided to be. We have people all the time come and ask us, hey, do you have anything in Spanish? Do you have anything in Spanish? Right now the answer is no. What we hope to do, that's why I said it's still theoretical, we're going to have a Spanish service, okay, that reaches Spanish-speaking families. The same time with our regular Sunday service. Language is the only issue. We don't want to do headphones. That's just our preference. I know some people do that. Praise God, we don't want to do that. Are their children already in English-speaking environments so they get to hang out with the rest of the kids, right? So we don't separate them. We let that happen. But they're worshiping together at the same time. So then what we want to do, we hope. This is our plan, okay? I haven't even shared this with all of my leaders yet. I'm just telling you because you asked the question. So here's the deal. We want to have, what does the American culture look like? What are the false idols of the American dream? What does it look like to be a family centered on the gospel? And what does it look like to be a family who are raising children in North America and in our particular context? How do you parent them? How do you shepherd them? How do you help them? And we also offer an ESL class and a GED class and a financial class with the hopes of them learning English, not because we want them to lose their culture and identity, but so that they can continue to progress as a family and be together. At the same time, we want to show their children, this is what your parents are going through. This is anxieties that they're feeling. This is why they're working so hard for you. This is why they're going through these things together. So we're trying to bring unity to the family and help them continue to grow and follow Jesus together. So that's not completely easy, but that's our plan. Yes? To some degree, not to the extent that we want to, because we haven't started a Spanish service yet. So.
We send our people to, like, Catholic stuff, too. Like,
yeah.
Our people in our neighborhood, they go to the First Holy Communion. They go to the King's India. They go to all that stuff, and they make it, like, we're the same. Like,
yes. Yeah. That's cool. Yes, sir?
In the area of gentrification, mm-hmm. like,
yeah.
They get pushed four blocks over.
Yeah.
The apartment complex gets popped up on their own.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that with the two different, like, you know, the young people might be moving in and you still want to reach both? Can you reach both, or do you need to pick one and focus on the people that are already there or the people that are coming in?
We're called to reach both.
Yeah.
Because the gospel is about a new man and a new people. And the gospel is about, they can be divided out there, but because of Jesus and the cross, we're now united in him. I'm supposed to love you, even though I kind of don't like the way, I don't like your hipster jeans, I don't like your clothes or whatever, but I love you. I don't like the way you act, you know, you look like a gangster everywhere you go, but because of the gospel, I can love you. So we're supposed to be the demonstration of what our community can look like together. Is it easy? No. You have to nail that when you preach, man. You have to nail that when you preach. In the inner city environment as a church, there's nothing more powerful than your pulpit, bro. That's why when you get up there, don't try to preach like everybody else. It's okay. You don't have to, bro. I mean, because you're preaching to you, the sheep that God is bringing there to be fed that day. And they're dealing with issues that perhaps other people aren't dealing with, you know. I just say that because most young guys, when they start preaching, that's one of the biggest things is, man, I want to preach well. And that's a noble desire to want to preach well. But I always tell guys, let well be marked by faithfulness to the scriptures. That's what decides if you preach well or not, not anything else, you know. So the answer is yes. How you do it, you be the bridge. You be the bridge to Jesus. Teach your church, hey, we're the bridge in this community that brings people that are disconnected. We connect them in the gospel. So I'll share this really quick. I just met with a young white dude who started visiting our church. And my wife's probably going to get mad at me when I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. So he emails me, and he's like, hey, Pastor, can we get together? And I said, man, I'll see. Not because I'm busy, not because I don't make time for him. I want him to be at my church. But you know how many emails like that have come to me? And then we go do lunch, and we go do this, all because they're going to visit me just two more Sundays. And then they're gone. So I said, man, I told him, when we finally met, I said, bro, I wanted to see if you were going to make it at least 2 or 3 weeks here before we get together. And I told him why. I'm going to say, because you know why? There's people who are different from the people that we're reaching, and they don't want nothing to do with that. And if you're about that, then I'm about you. And so let's do it together. So, yeah, it's hard, but one-on-ones, meetings, preaching and teaching, and just put it in the DNA of your church and all that you do. Yeah, anybody else? Last one? Yes, ma'am. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we're growing in that area. Yeah, everything's a crisis. I mean, it's always a crisis, man. So you got to do your due diligence. After a while, you get to know who they are, right? They keep coming on. We had one woman show up at our church, and she told new people at our church, this is a horrific story. She told people that she had gotten raped and that they had stolen all her money and that her family kicked her out because she was pregnant and they didn't want a child from a rape pregnancy in their home, and then she was in the streets. These people consulted nobody. They wanted to do good. They take her across the street. They buy her shoes and food and dresses and clothes and all this stuff, what Christians are supposed to do, right? What do you think she did with all that stuff within 2 hours? She sold it all. And you know how many times she'd run that scam?
Yeah.
Over and over again. So, yes, there are crises. Yes, there are times that we meet. But it's also doing our due diligence in our context and the people that we minister to. So there is limitations. Like our food pantries now is going to, we will serve you three to five times within these 3 months. After that, we want to know, like, how can we help you? Because there's obviously an ongoing problem. We can keep giving you food, but it's not going to fix your problem. So how do we help you fix that problem? So so it's you're going to have to learn to put people in place that their gift is organization, administration, and caring for people with a smile and helping them and loving them and just taking data and work with other churches. That's where what Billy said is super important, because if you're isolated, they're going to go from your church to the next church to the next church to the next thing to the next thing. But if you work together, you begin to, and it's not like, who's trying to scam us? That's not what we're trying to do, but we just want to be good stewards with what we have, you know. So I hope that helps. Yes, sir? Yes.
Tell them with a power bill.
Yeah,
food.
Yeah.
But then they would make an invitation, hey, if you want a relationship, we'd like to be involved in your life, you know, over the next year.
Thank you. That's
you,
good.
You know, have some steps. And some people say, no thanks, and that's fine. Lord bless you. But others would say, yeah, I am tired of this cycle, and I would like a relationship.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah. We had a gentleman who was on the run, fugitive, big time, and we're steady helping him. And the police came and told us, hey, man, this guy's been coming here. We're like, oh, Lord, you know. So I'm just saying, yeah, we got to grow in that. Yes, ma'am?
Well, I was just going to add, that sounds like it might have been Tim Keller's ministry.
Yes, yes.
I haven't read Generous Justice. I don't know if it's as practical, like, because I've dated, because I know Ministry of Mercy was bigger in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
But very practical, like.
Yes, yes. Say the title again. Ministries of Mercy.
Ministries of Mercy.
Okay.
Like, help everyone help the first time. Like, always try to say yes the first time. And then basically the idea that God saves us, but then we always have a part in it as well. It's free at first, and then we, I'm doing a wonderful job. So, Ministries of Mercy.
You're doing great. Hey, thank you, guys. If I can answer your question, I'll be here for a few minutes. Thank you, guys. You're free to go. God bless you.